Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. All right. It is go time. Week before Free Comic Book Day.
This is the scariest week of all time. This,
you know, everybody this braced?
This is like in Helm's Deep when the orcs are, there's like 10 billion orcs outside and they're running at them with that one that blows a hole in the wall and we've got our archers prepared. Anyway, it's a labored analogy, but I'm just saying where they're about to attack.
To be clear, Dave is not comparing anyone to orcs.
I was going to say, we're not comparing anyone. How cool are those orcs? No, that's just simulating. I'm just explaining the analogy of our terror.
Yes.
Not for comic days. You know, after 15 of them, I feel like we got it down all right.
I do. I always worry. You know, I was like, oh, is this the year nobody shows up? And that never happens.
Well, you know, in years past, we've had, like, the AC go out.
Yep.
We've had craziness happens.
Yes. We've had challenges.
We've had challenges.
But like you say, we've been doing this for 15 years. We feel like we've got it pretty under control.
Everybody has to persevere over whatever challenges attack. So.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we will... We're going to the much-delayed overview of the Free Comic Book Day books.
Yep.
It's just been crazy weeks, but we're going to hit that as soon as we get to the break, after we get after news, and we're going to tell you some of our picks, give you some pointers for our Free Comic Book Day. So stick around for that. But just remember, Free Comic Book Day this Saturday, May 7th.
Yeah. Tell family and friends. It's always, this is one of those where it's always cool to spread the word.
Tell your enemies.
Tell your frenemies, your enemies.
Then on May 21st, that's a Saturday, we'll be doing our Gaming with Rogues once more. That is going to be Betrayal at House on the Hill.
Oh, cool.
A big favorite. That is a cooperative game with a traitor mechanic to it that is different every time you play it. It's really fun. And they'll be doing that on May 21st, starting from 6:30 to about when we close at 9. Then that next Tuesday, we're doing our big midnight release. May 24th, we have a midnight release of DC Rebirth number 1, Scooby Apocalypse number 1, Captain America Steve Rogers number 1.
It's like a Dark Knight in that mix?
There's a Dark Knight special.
Special.
So basically, everything, all the DC Marvel books will go on sale at midnight that night.
Although, I know I'm going to be exhausted. I'm kind of looking forward to it because although we've done midnight releases before, this is the first crazy, it's almost like a full Wednesday on a Tuesday night.
And also, we are, you know, we're starting at 9 o'clock that night. We're going to be doing, like, DC deck building and some fun stuff like that. We'll probably run some fun stuff on the store
TV.
Let's
get a live DJ. What the hell?
Yeah, we'll get a live DJ. We'll get Hodor DJ for us. And then coming up in June, on June 7th, I talked about this last time, but we have got our ladies' night. We're going to close the store at 7 o'clock, I guess.
Yeah.
And basically, if you are a lady, you should come out because starting at 7:30 till maybe about 8:15, Kelly Sue DeConnick is going to be Skyping in to answer questions, talk about Bitch Planet, Captain Marvel, any number of other stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure you can have questions and just, you know, ask about the industry. What is it like working in there? How she busted in?
Yep. So this is sort of an in-store signing with the creator coming in remotely. It's our first time trying this out. Hopefully, if it goes well, we will be doing more of this. We're also going to have she's going to send us some signed books. So we will have signed copies of the Bitch Planet hardcover, signed copies of Bitch Planet 1 through 5 to give away. So come out for that and tell your friends, especially if they are ladies, because only ladies allowed at from 7 to 9.
Right.
And then we have our Reading with Rogues. That is actually June 14th. That's the next Tuesday. And that's going to be our bi-monthly graphic novel club for everybody to come out and talk comics with us.
Yep.
The focus books for May is Doctor Strange the Oath by Brian Vaughn and Marcos Martin. Yay. It's a great Doctor Strange story. And you can pick that up right now for 15% off. Or if you have a rogue card, 25% off.
Damn.
And then also in June, the June pick book is Saga Volume 1.
It's kind of crazy to me that we haven't gotten around to it.
I know.
Because it's basically the most popular book
in the whole
store.
So what you're saying is we're having a double punch of Brian Vaughn.
It'll be a good time to come out and talk about Why the Last Man and everything else. We'll be talking about Brian Vaughn quite a bit, I'm sure. But also, anything else you want to talk about in the realm of comics?
I'm going to talk about his Cyclops special that was like one of his first comics.
I'm only going to talk about his run on Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I'm going to talk about his What If that was the first comic he ever wrote.
I've got the obscure stuff covered.
Oh, yeah. I will not be talking about his Ultimate X-Men.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Somebody brings up Runaways, I'm going to shut him down.
That's right. No. Like,
we're talking about the weird shit.
All right. And then Free RPG Day is that Saturday, June 18th, giving away a bunch of free RPG stuff.
Yep.
And then June 25th, this is our first announcement of this. Usually we wait for Free Comic Book Day, but podcast listeners are getting a sneak peek.
Yeah.
All Ages Awesomeness is happening.
Woo.
So this is our sixth year of All Ages Awesomeness. This is our follow-up event to Free Comic Book Day. It will be starting at I believe, 10, running till about 6. We'll have people coming here doing signing, sketching. It's focused on sort of all ages, but everybody can come out. But if you're a younger fan or you got kids, they will get free sketches that day from a whole bunch of artists.
Yep.
And the list of artists we've got is pretty impressive. It's from Houston, we've got Isaiah Broussard and Jesse Jordan. From Austin, we've got Irene Strykowski, I think that's right.
Sure.
Coming in from Dallas, we've got Jake Eckes and Devin Kraft and Robert Wilson, who you might know from Heartthrob, Oni's book, yeah. Heartthrob.
And Evan
Cranston has been at every All Ages Awesomeness.
He has been to every single one.
He is the only guy who's been to every one of them.
He's basically carrying this.
Evan is fantastic. He's one of the nicest guys we know, and he's also a fantastic artist. So,
yes.
And then our big guests, Babs Tarr, designer of the Batgirl of Burnside, or actually artist of the Batgirl of Burnside. Yes. I believe Cameron Stewart actually designed the character.
I believe that's correct.
But she is an amazing designer, though.
Yeah, she is an amazing designer. And she's got a new Image book called Motor Crush coming out in December. I'm sure she'll have some preview stuff for that. I'm sure she'll have some of her prints. She's great, and she's really good at sketches, and is also just a great person. And then Joe Quinones, who is the current artist on Howard the Duck, has also done some Harley Quinn, some Green Lantern, and a reasonable run on another Marvel book that I'm blanking on right now.
Also did Wednesday Comics.
Oh, Captain Marvel. He did Captain Marvel.
That's right, he did Captain Marvel.
With Kelly Sue DeConnick, actually. Well, so, yeah. That's our lineup. You'll see the whole thing's going to go up on our Facebook and our webpage on Saturday. You'll get a flyer if you come up for Free Comic Book Day on Saturday. But mark June 25th in your calendar. It's our biggest event of the year that is not Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah.
All right. On to other news that is not store news. Let's hit TV first, because there's a lot of TV news.
Okay.
So we have some stuff that's been sort of backing up on us. We want to run through real quick.
Yeah.
Crackle is doing a Snatch TV show.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Which I love. I mean, basically, it's just going to be British gangster antics. I love the movie Snatch. I know Nick likes the movie Snatch. I know Dave does not like the movie Snatch.
Correct on all counts. What's Crackle?
Crackle is a network best known for having comedians in cars getting coffee.
Do they have a adult rating?
Yes.
I feel like whatever the case, this one needs it.
Yes, they do.
Have they said if Guy Ritchie is involved in any way?
I don't think they have. Okay. I assume he's like producer.
Yeah,
but,
I would imagine.
But who knows? But
okay.
So that's interesting.
You never know. I might actually like it.
Doctor Who has announced a new companion. It is Pearl Mackey, and that's all I know about that.
I watched the little teaser that showed her. Was not immediately into her.
Okay.
She's very... she reminded me of, like, a few companions past. Who's the redhead? Donna?
Donna, yeah.
She was a little bit Donna, but she kind of looked... She was like crazy big-haired 80s lady.
Okay.
But the same way Donna kind of, like, punctured a little bit the Doctor a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
They're being chased by, like, a Dalek, and this was almost too meta to me.
Sure.
And she's, like, making fun of its plunger arms and stuff like that. And it was kind of funny, but at the same time, I was like, I don't think I can live with that for too long.
Yeah.
Daleks are insanely dangerous.
Well, so
creatures.
The Doctor is, like, telling her all this stuff. He's completely straight-faced, and she's, like, kind of like, oh, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe like she's not the real companion. Maybe she's killed by the Daleks, and he's like...
just runs her over.
Yep.
And then they bring back a favorite. but you know, like it's hard to tell. It was a short clip. I'm interested enough to see. Somebody was saying that she seemed a little bit, and maybe it was just like the big hair. This might have been Mandy talking about it or something. Like she might have been plucked out of time.
From the 80s?
Like from the 80s?
That would at least be interesting.
Which would be kind of a fun thing. Like I also, like in general, I feel like it'd be kind of interesting to take a companion from... some other era, or like who's an alien?
Yeah,
I'm sort of surprised they haven't kind of dabbled with it.
Well, the modern one hasn't. I believe the old ones have.
Am I misremembering? Is this going to be the first season that's not Moffat run?
I think you're right on that.
And because Moffat has left,
I've fallen off Doctor Who. To be honest,
I have
not watched the last season and a half.
Yep.
So
too much of a good thing. You were just feeling like it was, like, just tapering.
Let's just say too much. Okay, so this is not so much news as I find it amusing. George R. R. Martin has said that he wants HBO to do Dunkin' Egg, which is, you know, Dunkin' the Tall.
It sounded like you said Dunkin' Egg. Dunk and Egg, right?
Dunk and Egg.
Yeah.
His stories that take place, what, like a few thousand years?
No, it's like 400 years.
400 years before...
Before Game of Thrones, yeah. As we know it.
And these are ones... We've got the graphic novels of the two, Sworn Sword, The Hedge Knight.
They sell really well, yeah, they're and they're... It's good stuff.
It's Knight's Tale, but done more seriously world of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it very much is. The initial plot hook is a Knight's Tale, although like the second graphic novel...
You will
not have
Queen in the background, like you would in
Right.
The second graphic novel just follows the same character, but has no Knight's Tale-ish elements.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they're good, and it's interesting stories, and I guess based on his short stories. But I'm somewhat amused that people are reporting things like this, like, George R.R. Martin wants HBO to give him more money. Well, of course he does. But I guess, you know, given that some people were wondering if maybe he was mad at HBO for going ahead, even though he had not finished the books, I guess that pretty much clears that up.
Yeah, right.
Or does George R. R. Martin want them to make these instead of continuing Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
They're like, just make these, and when I get back to the book, put it on hiatus.
You know, no. Nick, I'm more slowly following your footsteps of watching the series, and, when Bran, when his, like, governess or whatever is taking care of him after his fall...
Yes,
she's offering to tell him some stories, and she actually mentions Sir Dunkin' the Tall.
Yep.
Which it hadn't quite clicked until I was rewatching it that this was that character from 400 years ago has apparently become kind of a folk hero
mm-hmm.
in the present times.
Yeah.
One other Game of Thrones note, real quick, Randy. Epic rap battles. The fifth season started last night.
I have not watched
it. I thought it was great.
It was great.
It's George R.R. Martin versus J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yes.
Some of their wittiest lyrics I've heard, and I'm going to say strong showings on both sides.
Yep. Yep.
I love Tolkien, and I love George R.R. Martin too. But I didn't see it punctured.
I didn't go back and rewatch, but was that the real Hodor?
Oh, I don't know.
I think it might have been.
You know, they get people on that series.
I wouldn't be shocked.
I mean, it's just a little cameo appearance. It wouldn't surprise me. But I thought that might have actually been Hodor.
Yeah, it might have been.
But the thing is, HBO, Game of Thrones is wrapping up with season 8.
Right.
So, and they're saying they might be shorter seasons. So we've got season 6 running right now, 2 more seasons. I'm sure HBO will be looking to extend that brand if they could. So it's not the worst idea I've ever heard.
No.
We'll see if they manage to pick that up.
Mostly, as far as I know, he's only written the 2 stories with Sir Dunkin'. I don't know what all material they'd be drawing on or if they'd be going fully original stuff at that
point. I don't know. I mean, they'd probably just get Benioff and Weiss to improve on that like they improved on the books. Yeah. That's right. I said it.
Oh, my gosh.
I will agree with it.
I haven't read enough of the books to comment.
No, Dave, it's going to make people mad. Let's be unanimous. all right, let's turn to Netflix, because there's a bunch of news out of Netflix. Going back a little ways, they cast both Joy and Ward Meacham for the Netflix shows. I don't know if it's anybody particularly notable. It's just kind of notable that those characters are going to be in it.
Yeah, for Iron Fist.
Yeah, those are Iron Fist.
What are y'all talking about?
Sorry. Joy Meacham is like... Ward Meacham is his dad's business partner,
yes,
right?
Yes, they were... yeah, it was basically his dad's business partner, and they were sort of son and daughter of that,
yes,
and friends of Danny,
and Joy is Ward's daughter, and like they were childhood friends. I think it might even be a romantic thing going on.
I think there may have been,
but there's also like a can't quite trust Joy because Ward turned out like betray his father,
yes,
kind of thing. So we'll see if that's where they go. But it's interesting how close to the source material they're hewing for Iron Fist and Power Man, all that kind of stuff. Exciting news for Dave. They have cast in the new Netflix Watership Down.
Oh, yeah.
John Boyega and James McAvoy.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty notable. You know, of course, I'm a big fan of the original one. It's beyond the sort of, I'm going to say, sort of one-note joke people do about it traumatizing them. It's
right.
A really good movie, pretty faithful adaptation. But I do think, just because I believe they're doing this as CG, and I think the tech is there for it now... I'm looking forward to it. I feel like an original production. I believe it's going to be like four episodes or like a four-episode miniseries or something like that. So that'll give it a little bit more breathing room than a single movie did. To
it
be
is,
kind of
it is animated, right?
Yeah, it's but CG, I think.
Okay.
No, it's going to be James like, McAvoy with rabbit ears.
I just didn't know they were like motion cap CGI or anything.
Well, and
do you remember the Easter Bunny versus Genghis Khan epic rap battle?
Yes.
that's what the runnings are going to look like, right?
Yes, okay.
Well, and I know James McAvoy is a great voice actor. He did a fantastic production of Neil Gaiman's Neverwhere.
Oh, okay.
That sort of did a radio drama of it. And he was one of the main characters, and he was fantastic. So.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I think both those guys are going to be good, and I imagine this is going to be a real, real quality production.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's the news that's not news, the Punisher spinoff.
Oh, right.
We all knew this was coming. Even before the show came on and John Berthel was a huge hit, we knew they were going to be doing this.
Even before Jeff Loeb said, No, we're not doing that.
It's coming. They've officially confirmed. Punisher spinoff. I don't think they've given us a timeline on that yet.
No, but I bet it's after Defenders.
Probably so. But that's super cool because Berthel was great, and I want to see what they'll do with just the Punisher story.
Give him a team. I want Microchip,
too. We all want Microchip. They've got to do Microchip.
I mean, he's got to have somebody.
Yeah, I bet they do. There's so much Punisher solo material to draw from at this point.
His name. He should be Flash Drive.
Yeah. Dave, you are now kicked out of this group.
Flash Drive. Maybe Flash Drive 2000.
You want to update Soundwave's name from Transformers?
My fear is simply, at least this is more for me than anybody else. I think people will enjoy it. I feel like Punisher is not a character... I feel like he would actually have a tough time with a solo series.
But they've done literally 20 years with a solo series with him.
None of which has been any good.
That's not true. And I know you don't even believe that.
No, but it's sort of rare for me. It's also one of those ones where, I guess, an ongoing TV show somehow seems different to me. I feel like the realism or something is going to be like, make it weirder, or it's going to be, you know, that problem that they occasionally have in the comics of, like, why don't they stop this murderous vigilante, will somehow feel more real when we see, like, a physical person doing it.
What if they, I mean, true, but what if they just adapt Ennis's?
Ennis's Punisher Max run. Yeah. The problem is some of that is Marvel. You know, like, he's got Nick Fury and he does the thing in Russia and all that stuff would feel weird.
That'd be pretty easy to edit that out.
That could be easily omitted.
Yeah.
A lot of the storylines, like the Kitchen Irish and all that stuff, are essentially standalone.
And those were Punisher stories, but he wasn't, like, the super main focus. He was always sort of the weapon.
Ennis very much liked to show what was going on from the bad guy's perspective and how they lensed the Punisher.
And he gave some good supporting characters. I mean, I can't remember her name, but the woman who gets sort of entangled.
The mousy woman. Was her name Mouse?
Oh, might have been.
I don't remember.
I don't know. But he did a good job, and it's a good sort of blueprint for
I suspect they'll probably be looking at that pretty closely.
Can we get a flashback to, Punisher Born?
That'd be They're not going to... I mean, they have to have dropped the Vietnam as the specific war, right? Or did they...
Yeah. No, he's Afghanistan, right?
But, I mean, they could do some sort of equivalent of
that, which would be really
interesting.
Yeah.
Since, you know, the Marvel movies and, you know, therefore, at least somewhat by extension, the Netflix stuff, does have a timeline. I think they're going to allow probably the actors to age and maybe even get into weird legacy territory at some point. So they can pick a war and not have to worry about updating it, you know, if they pick a Gulf War type thing. They'll just have to stick with it.
Yep. All right. Two more TV bits of news, and these are both from other streaming services. Amazon, you might remember, is doing a Jack Ryan show.
Okay.
Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan show. They've cast John Krasinski from The Office, and more notably from Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah.
How old is this guy?
In his late 30s, early 40s. He's married to Emily Blunt.
Okay. Good for him.
Yep.
I was trying to figure out if they were getting someone too young for Jack Ryan.
No, I think he's about right. He's probably right. mid-30s to mid to late 30s, I would say, is where he's at.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I can't picture this actor immediately, but...
Yeah, you haven't watched The Office. Okay. I like Krasinski. I think it's great casting. It reminds me of a little bit of what they did when they brought Chris Pratt in to be Star-Lord.
Yeah.
And then go on to Jurassic World.
Jack Ryan was never supposed to be like the action hero. He was mainly an analyst.
Yeah, but I bet they're going with the action hero take.
You think so?
Yeah. Just based on Krasinski and having done, like I say, Zero Dark Thirty and done some action movies. I think that probably they're getting him. They're getting him because he's a good actor, not just because he's
Yeah,
that's a little sort of. See, that would sort of disappoint me if they did that, because the best Clancy ones are like, you know, obviously Hunt for Red October, but also was it Patriot Games and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean maybe, but I'm expecting this to be more in the vein of 24.
Well, he was he's going to be doing more.
I think
punching.
Clancy did make him sort of a CIA operative, but then he had some sort of, you know, he got his legs smashed in like the helicopter accident, or he was injured in there. And
so Jack Ryan?
Yeah.
That in the books, I don't remember that. It was
in
the books.
In Hunt for October, you're talking about when he got his back cracked?
Or his back cracked, not his legs.
Yeah, because that's the big thing from Hunt for October. Remember they talk about how he did his basic training and that kind of thing? Yeah.
Yeah, the only time I remember like him getting actually sort of in action in the movies was when he shoots Sean Bean's little brother. And and then that speedboat chase that they tacked on.
Well, and then the third movie where he goes in and he's like running the operation in Venezuela or whatever.
But he's not like that has operatives. He was still supposed to be just sort of.
Remember when they go in and rescue the guy?
Yeah, honestly, but I consider that like sort of a weaker point.
Yeah,
I mean, that was also an older Jack Ryan. So if they went younger, I mean, I think it's perfect.
I don't mind a little bit of field work, but I just hope he's not punching a lot of people.
I hope so, too, but I would guess they're going to action it up a little bit. We'll see. I don't know. And then there's The Handmaid's Tale over at Hulu, which is going to have Elizabeth Moss from Mad Men and West Wing.
Yep. That's where she first originally showed up.
She looks so young in that, too.
Is this a miniseries?
Miniseries, yes, based on the Margaret Atwood story.
Yep, which I know they made a movie of in, what, late 80s or late 90s? Yeah. I have not read nor seen it, but I know it to be a pretty, notable sort of not apocalyptic but dystopian feminist novel.
Yeah,
it always sounded good to me. I just have never gotten around to it. It also sounded very bleak.
And that's through what?
That's through Hulu.
Because I think it's sort of like a theocratic kind of world.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. It seems appropriate in our current time to be something to address.
Might. Yeah, what, do you think some kind of dystopia or apocalypse could happen now?
I have no comment. All right.
We'll talk in December.
One quick bit of gaming news. We've been talking for a long time about Magic the Gathering should move over to D&D, since the company owns both. And they're finally making sort of a tiny tentative step in that direction with Zendikar?
Yes, I think so.
There's a PDF that you can download from Wizards.com where you can basically play D&D in the world of Magic the Gathering in Zendikar.
Yeah, they have, some race and class options that are unique to it. I mean, it seems like a neat idea.
It does.
I don't know Zendikar personally well enough for that to be, like, an allure, but I'd kind of like to go and read it and just see what its deal is, because whenever I see the lore of Magic, I know it probably is kind of irrelevant to a lot of the players.
Yeah.
But some people are into it, and whenever I hear about it, it's really pretty good.
Yeah, I agree. And then I want to mention a local thing, which is the We All Love Fiasco.
Yeah.
There is a improv group which involves Mark Mansher, the guy who does Fluffy Bunny Tea Party.
Yep.
He's a game designer and an improv actor, among other things. And he is among the people acting in this improv show based on Fiasco.
Right, and people who listen to this regularly probably know this, but Fiasco is like a sort of one-night RPG slash almost party game.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you play out a Coen Brothers movie, often kind of crazed and violent, but in, you know, weirdly comical ways. We always think of Big Lebowski as the best example for when we play it, anyway. So the idea of actually putting some improv people behind that sounds potentially amazing.
Yeah, and it's going to be at the Hideout Theater. I believe it's every Saturday in May and June.
That's awesome that they're doing that many of them.
Yeah. All right.
Randy, do you think they'll screw up the rules like we did
probably.
The first few times?
Yeah, sure. In fact, we're going to be providing them with Fiasco books to sell at the shows. So.
That's awesome. And I will say, Fiasco is a game where our rules screw up games were super awesome and fun. There was not a problem at all.
Yep. All right. Let's move on to movie news, mostly casting news. They have cast their Tomb Raider. There were rumors it was going to be Daisy Ridley, but it is, in fact, Alicia Vikander, who you might know as the robot from Ex Machina or from The Danish Girl. I can't help but feel this is a waste of a really good actress, because video game movies have not traditionally been great, and I don't have a huge fondness for the Tomb Raider property. But, Dave, you were pointing out before we were recording sort of that this could be...
Well, the video game, the comics industry, sometime in the, like... around the year 2000, maybe with like Spider-Man and X-Men, kind of started to grow up.
Yeah.
They finally got their big movie, and the big, maybe the biggest one you mentioned is Iron Man.
Yeah.
That's when the Marvel movies really got off up and running. And you were saying video game movies need their Iron Man.
Yeah.
And I completely agree. We've all been waiting for it for our whole lives, yeah, and it hasn't happened. It could be this one. You know, I will say, if you're not getting Daisy Ridley, who would have been a great choice, and I love the new Tomb Raider games. They're great.
I was going to say, from what I've heard, that they're basing some of it on, like, the the first game that they just
did. You're going to actually, like, use that sort of as a plot.
Sort of her first adventure.
But this, what's her name, the new actress?
Alicia Vikander.
She's been great from the stuff I've seen her in so far.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it's her and not Daisy Ridley, because I'd like Daisy Ridley to get something better.
That's probably the case. I would like for this to be the one. I have a feeling it won't.
Yeah,
it won't
we'll be. See.
We'll see who they get to direct.
But you know, there was a huge sea change after Iron Man, where like serious actors started taking these comic book movies, and not just occasionally, like every freaking time.
Right.
And video games have a lot of great stories behind them. I mean, so much money is made on them.
Yep.
It's kind of crazy that they haven't had their Iron Man yet. So
yeah, it is.
They really should put some effort into
this.
Well,
UA Bowl has been single-handedly holding down the video game movies.
Everything he can.
So
don't go watch Doom. Please don't.
All right. There's been an option, recent option on Claus, the book that we've been really enjoying.
Basically Santa Claus Year One.
Santa Claus Year One by Grant Morrison.
Fox decided to kind of grab that and see what they can do with it.
Makes perfect sense. I don't know if that film will actually happen, but that's something that could easily translate to a movie.
Yeah. One of the most easily
we were talking about it.
Morrison stories.
Yep, we were talking about it this morning, and Tila also mentioned Happy as like one of his more straightforward stories, and I think that would make a good weird movie too.
Yeah, I can see that.
Well, that is a Netflix series.
See, but it's only
one story.
Yeah,
it's a movie. It's actually one of the few things that's actually a movie and not a show.
But I'd like to see this happen. I think it'd be pretty cool. I think you could have it'd be like both fun and cool as a movie.
Yeah.
And heartwarming in its way.
I could definitely see it working.
I would love to add more things to my Christmas watch list.
That would be amazing, yeah.
And then a little bit of older news that Nick pointed out, I don't think we covered, which is that we talked about the shared universe of Mask, G.I. Joe, Visionaries, and something else.
Transformers,
yeah.
So the movies that are going to like be spinning off of those properties are going to in some way be connected.
The notion is there's a shared universe between Transformers, G.I. Joe, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Mask.
They dabbled in that in the comics in the past.
Mask, which makes sense because that basically is G.I. Joe plus Transformers. It's transforming cars with a special missions force.
Sure.
And Visionaries, which is about guys in a post-apocalyptic future with holographic shields.
We did forget one.
Oh, we forgot
Rom.
We forgot about Rom.
So this is going to be weird, though. Like, G.I. Joe will be operating in a world where there like might be post-apocalyptic time travelers, that Rom will be hunting dire wraiths somewhere out there.
Sure.
And Mask will be transforming something into something else.
And going after Venom.
But the interesting thing about this is who they got as their, like, their stewards. They're Kevin Feige's or their Zack Snyder's, if you will.
Randy, you know what you were just saying about wasting Daisy Ridley?
Yeah.
This is like that, but on a grandiose scale for me.
So they have award-winning writer Brian K. Vaughan.
Yep.
And, like, Nobel Prize or Pulitzer Prize winning author Michael Chabon as their stewards for this.
Yep.
Now, as someone who has a fondness for all these properties, I'm okay with this. It seems weird. I imagine there must be a lot of money involved.
I have a fondness for about half of those properties.
Yeah.
But my fondness does not extend to the crossover thing, really. I like them like as individual things.
You like your peanut butter, you like your chocolate, but you don't want people to mix the peanut butter and chocolate.
Cram those two things together.
No,
chocolate is amazing.
What kind of abomination?
I guess I'm saying, the Marvel movies are like peanut butter, are like the Reese's peanut butter cups of the world. This is, I'm going to say...
This is more like pizza and peanut butter?
Licorice and picante sauce.
You like both, but not together.
Correct.
All right. But yeah.
That's also a buddy cop movie.
Licorice and picante sauce.
I don't know. It's mind-boggling to me. I will say, with that, the talent behind it, maybe.
Yeah.
If possible.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to be out of the gates crossing over. I think you're going to have to...
But, like, how much proving time are these movies going to have? Are you going to have Mask?
I mean, you could take elements of what Michael Bay and all that he did with Transformers and what they did with G.I. Joe and sort of meld it into, like, a mass story. Are they
gonna,
and then,
I mean, like, that's another question. Is it going to presume that these movies, is it going to reboot them?
Yeah, I don't know. Because there's a lot of problems with both G.I. Joe and Transformers.
There are.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm just fascinated by that. That sounds very interesting.
I feel like I've accidentally stepped into one of those alternate Earths we're always talking about.
Where there's alligators people and people are alligators.
Yes, and just as unlikely, Michael Chabon and Brian Vaughn are shepherding a toy-based shared universe of movies.
It does feel a little weird. This is the universe where Michael Knight goes into battle riding a robotic orangutan.
Yes. That's going to make no sense to anybody but us.
Yep, that's
barely,
okay.
And barely to us.
One last little bit, though, is that as a result of all this, IDW is doing a new Mask comic.
Yep.
Which is going to be, what is it, they're calling it Fast and the Furious, basically?
Yeah, they're still going to have the different like factions, Mask and Venom, but it's going to be more Fast and Furious style and the the art style is really fun. So, we'll see. They've said it's kind of gritty, and who knows? That's not exactly what I expect.
But like the Power Rangers book seems like it found a balance without going full gritty.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean...
Hey, is MASK an acronym?
Yes. Yes. I cannot remember what it is.
Mobile Something Strike Command?
Command with a K?
I believe so.
Like they're Klansmen?
Yes.
Just checking.
Mobile Armored Strike Command? Is that right?
I think it might be. That sounds pretty good. Let us know.
They were cool. I had all their action figures.
I had the motorcycle that turned into a helicopter.
Yeah.
Same here.
I think Brad Condor?
That one was inexpensive.
Yeah.
It was like $10 or something probably. And it was, I mean, both the helicopter and motorcycle are super awesome.
Yep.
I just remember the villainous Sly Rax in his motorcycle and sidecar.
Wow, you can't see the look I'm giving Nick, but it's utter puzzlement.
Michael Chabon right now is trying to find a way to really make Sly Rax? Is that right?
Sly is his first name and Rax is his last
Sly,
name.
He's trying to find a way to make Sly Rax fit in with the Visionaries' post-apocalyptic future.
Yep.
I don't remember any of the Visionaries' names. I had toys of them.
Did they have holograms?
They had holograms on their chest that they came out and fought.
Hey man, it was the 80s. Holograms were big.
Maybe they'll make a comeback.
I hope that the Visionaries comic that IDW is going to do, because you know that's going to happen. I hope it has hologram covers.
That would be worth it.
Oh my.
All right. I'll be back in just a second to talk about Free Comic Book Day offerings, so stay tuned. All right. I don't know if I mentioned this. Free Comic Book Day is this Saturday.
What's that all about?
So you come in the store. This is our 15th year doing Free Comic Book Day. And here's how this works. We get questions about this every year. So here's the rundown. You come in. You probably want to show up early because we open the doors at 10 o'clock. But there is always a line. Usually starts about 9 a.m. Yep. And then that line runs till about, I'd say, 2.
Yeah.
Like it's going to be a line to get
it
in.
It kind of ebbs and flows. It definitely won't be as big as it was at 9, like when we open at 10, at noon, I think.
Right.
It'll still be there. Right. It's not going to be a monstrous.
But you come in, you wait in line, you come up to the tables. We have an assortment of, this year it's 50 different books, as well as we always have a few things left over from 2014, 2015. So there's probably a good 60, 70 different books at least. You pick five, and if you have more people with you, each of you gets 5.
Yep. It's kind of cafeteria style. You can browse them and read them. Actually, I guess that's not cafeteria style because you don't go, like, pick up the food and manhandle it in a cafeteria.
No, I hope not.
At the buffet.
Dave visits some interesting cafeterias.
I check them for freshness.
Dave licks all the food at the cafeteria.
kind of smashes his face.
I'll, like, pick up a drumstick. I'll take a few little bite nibbles off it. And I'll be like, I'm not feeling it, and I put it back.
Yeah, if you've ever wondered why those pictures of Dave are up in Luby's, that's why. Do not serve this man.
But anyway, yes, you can browse the comics and stuff a little bit. And
you will get 5 of each. Yep. We break it down by age group, G, PG, and R, sort of our guesstimation having looked at them.
Yeah, I think we're usually close.
Yeah, and we will say, if you get here early, you might get a little bonus in the line.
That's right.
Also, we're going to put out our posters this year. We've got a bunch of free promo posters. So earlier you get here, there's a chance you might get some free posters to walk out with.
Sure.
We'll also be announcing our All Ages event. We'll have flyers for that. And it's just a good time to come in and check out comics. And y'all are listening to this. You're in the store every week. But this is some people's only visit for the year. So,
And it's you know, that's something else. It's like, while you're waiting in line – there's just like people, endless people around you enthusing about comics, talking about their favorites, yep. checking out books on the shelves. You know, we'll have our new TV up and running, no doubt, with cool trailers and stuff.
Yep.
So it is just like the most comic booky atmosphere I can imagine, sort of short of San Diego's Comic-Con or something
yeah,
like
it's,
that.
Yeah, it's the comics holiday. So we've got the books. We didn't grab all 50, but we did look through all 50. And we're going to talk about some of our favorites and some of the ones we think people want to keep an eye out for. The first two I think we want to mention are the two Marvel selections.
Yeah.
Because Marvel really does, they've always been going all out on this. They produce new books every year, and they now they're producing two every year.
They tie into a movie, yeah.
So this is, I mean, Marvel owns this holiday in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
In the same way they own the theater, sorry, fans of Batman v Superman. And I mean, sorry that you're fans of Batman v Superman. So the one of the books is Captain America, Steve Rogers. This is Nick Spencer and Jesus Saez. They are the regular creative team of the book that's going to be coming out about later in the month. And this is their intro to the character. It's a short, like, 10-page story that intros... What is Steve Rogers doing now that he's back to being a young man, back to being back Captain America?
He's got his new costume and his new shield.
Yep.
He's about as young as he was when he originally became Captain.
Yep.
I mean, oh, really? He has, like, gotten...
Yeah.
He's
younger, yeah.
So he's...
But this is a great story. I think Nick and I were both a little worried about whether or not he could handle regular Cap as well as Falcon Cap.
Yeah, I was worried he wouldn't get the voice of Steve Rogers correct.
But it's perfect.
It is.
It's also got... it's action-heavy. It's got Sharon Carter. It's got... Falcon, and it's got Sam Wilson as Cap. It's got a couple of his notable bad guys. They're setting up the arc, so it's a great intro to the new Cap.
It is.
And then in the backup of that story is an Amazing Spider-Man leading to the next big Amazing Spider-Man crossover story called Dead No More,
right?
Which has an interesting hook to it.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting sort of final
I don't think
page
I read that
tease.
Backup. I know that the little ads have been teasing. What, the return of lots of dead villains?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And a few other people, too.
Yeah, it's, you know, Dan Slott has made a career of taking what sounds like a bad idea and making it into something good. And this is probably another one of those. I'm like, people coming back to life can get annoying, but I like what he's doing here.
Yeah, he's had about 10 good years on Spider-Man so far. So at this point, he's pretty much secured his spot.
The other book that I'm sure everyone's going to want to take a look at is Civil War II. Which the lead story is a prologue to leading into Civil War II, and it sets up. It's Bendis writing. It is Jim Cheung on art, and it sets up the conflict and what's going on. It has some big notable developments in it.
Yep.
Which, for the record, although it will be another superhero Civil War thing, it doesn't have anything to do with the previous Civil War. It is not based off of that same issue.
It's different heroes. I mean, it's Iron Man and Captain Marvel seem to be the ones mainly at odds. It's heroes at odds, but the reason for it is nothing to do with either the movie or the original comic.
Correct.
But it's interesting, and I am as we've established, not a big Bendis fan.
Yep.
But I thought this was a good opener.
It is, and it's an interesting idea and sort of reasons for being at conflict. So
some of the darker stuff in it, I'm not sure how I feel about yet, but I'm also not quite sure how it's going to pan out.
There's also, in the backup, a Mark Waid-written story that's going to tie into all new, all different Avengers that introduces the new Wasp.
I rather liked this one.
I did, too. It's a great little story.
Yeah, she's a good character, and it's an excellent little introductory one-off.
Mm-hmm.
So, not to be outdone, DC also has two books. Their tradition now has been to do a reprint of one of their main books that's sort of aimed at the older audience, and then an all-ages book.
Right.
So their all-ages book this year is DC Superhero Girls, which is an excerpt from the graphic novel that's going to be coming out.
Yep.
And if you've seen the web, you've probably seen the web cartoons, or probably seen the doll at Target.
Yeah, it's the all-ages, girl-centric, kind of high school-y.
Yeah. And then their Free Comic Day selection is tied into their movie that's coming out in August, which is a reprint of the New 52 Suicide Squad number 1. We were wondering through this. Dave and I believe we both remember liking this story overall. The first issue is a little torturific.
Yes. Yes, I'd forgotten. I was not wild about this particular issue, but I do remember that same team would go on to produce that first volume, which I did like.
Yeah.
So it's really just the Free Comic one. No, there's good stuff in it. It's not for the kiddies.
No, it's definitely not for kids.
You may have some like young ones who are really into the look of the Suicide Squad. This is literally this is the bad guys in this are put through a torture ringer.
Yeah,
and it's a little dark for the young ones.
But it fits in line with what they've released for the trailers of the new Suicide Squad movie. I mean, it's Harley, it's Deadshot, it's King. I mean, it's not Killer Croc, but you know,
no, it's King Shark instead.
But it's that same sort of feel to it. So yeah, not for kids.
I mean, if teenagers maybe, but not for kids.
Yeah.
All right. Then we move on to the other sort of big companies. IDW is producing ROM number zero.
Speaking of toy lines that became comics as we were earlier, ROM was one of the big successes of the late 70s, early 80s. Almost yep. anybody who was around then generally has fond memories of it. He was, the space knight who was hunting alien infiltrators on Earth.
Yep.
He had cool weapons and gear, but was generally kind of feared by a lot of the populace. They thought he was more dangerous than they were. A lot of times because when he blasted them, the public didn't see that they were shape-changing aliens. It looked to them like he was murdering people.
Yeah. The Ramen Marvel Comics was beloved. It was done by Bill Mantlow and Michael Golden.
And of course, he did crossover.
Somebody notable.
Well, they've had a bunch of different ones. Sal Buscema had a long run on with various inkers on that.
But it was a character that got ingrained in a lot of people's brains. Yeah.
He crossed over with X-Men.
Yeah.
And a ton of characters.
And one of those people is Chris Royale from IDW.
Yeah, who's the editor-in-chief.
Loved this property. And now we have ROM, and also they have Micronauts.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, where Micronauts kind of rebuilt it from the ground up, this is actually pretty close to the classic ROM comic.
Yeah.
This,
yeah.
You know, sort of rural, he crash lands in this rural setting, immediately finds himself in that kind of weird position of hunting what looks like to normal people, like people.
Yeah.
I thought the setup was really cool, and the sort of...
And he looks cool, too, by the way. It's a good redesign of the armor, I have to say.
Yeah, it is.
Stays true to the basic look of it, but, I'm going to say puts it a little bit through, sort of an anime lensing and, some just good original ideas.
I forget who the artist on this, but I know it's Christos Gage writing it.
It's David Messina. It's written by Chris Ryle and Christos Gage. And, It's basically one of those things where I wasn't sure it was going to work without the Marvel connection, but I actually think it's going to work better because him being the only alien on the planet, that it's weird that aliens exist is different than the Marvel universe. And I think it's going to work, but it's a good first issue.
Yeah, it's a very good first issue.
And then we have Valiant, which did a sampler. They have a chapters from their 4001 AD, which comes out this week. Divinity 2, Archer and Armstrong, Faith, Bloodshot, and then some of their Valiant universe stuff. So. If you wanted to dabble into the Valiant stuff, this is a good sample of a variety of their stuff.
Yeah, we've been talking about Valiant off and on for the last year or so, and that's as good a shot as you're going to get to just try some out.
Yep. And then there's Dark Horse. Dark Horse also does two comics a year.
One that's
all ages, and one that's aimed a little older. And the one that's aimed a little older has, as with the last few years, a Serenity lead story. That's a.k.a. Firefly.
One of my favorite things for all of Free Comic Book.
This was really good. It's written by Chris Roberson, former Austinite. And it is basically, I think we mentioned this in the last podcast, but it's River telling a story to Zoe and Wash's kid, who's too young to understand it. But she's telling a story about...
it's sort of an encapsulation of the adventures of the Firefly crew.
Yes.
But as a fairy tale.
Yeah.
And if you happen to have read way back in the day in the X-Men, Kitty's fairy tale, where she spun their adventures as a fairy tale, it's for sure influenced by, inspired by, et cetera, and they do a really good job.
Yeah,
it's really good. The artist is Stephen Byrne, and it has sort of an animated look to it. Mm-hmm. It's a really fun story. There's also a Hellboy story in here with art by Richard Corbin, and then a teaser of the new Aliens Defiance by... Brian Wood and Tristan Jones.
Yep. That is a good collection.
And then the other sampler from Dark Horse has Legend of Korra, which features original story by one of the creators of Korra.
This is the first time we've seen any Korra comic, right?
Yep. No, I think there was something in last year's Free Comic Book Day as well.
Was it? I thought there was just an
Avatar. I thought Korra, but I'm not sure.
As you're flipping through it, Randy, I'm seeing that art is really nice.
It's really
Korra.
Good.
And also, although I don't think I read the next one, is it How to Train Your Dragon?
Yeah.
The art was beautiful on that.
But something notable about the Korra story is
it's
basically her first, or how she and Naga meet.
Yes.
And Naga is her big polar bear dog, and her friend and sort of, you know, confidant in a lot of ways. So.
It is interesting how comics are sometimes the place where fairly notable side stories that weren't revealed in other mediums come out, whether it's
Zuko's mom.
Shepherd Book's secret origin, for Serenity, C-3PO's red arm, and here meeting of two beloved characters in Korra.
Then there's the How to Train Your Dragon story ties into the How to Train Your Dragon 2 and the Dragon series that's been on Netflix. And
it's really good.
Dark Horse is getting the How to Train Your Dragon license, and this is their teaser for what they're going to do with it, and it's really good. And then, of course, there's a little short backup of Plants vs. Zombies.
I hear the kids like
which
that.
These are really funny. They're fun. All right. Then we've got the reprint of Archie number 1 by Mark Waid and Fiona Staples. This is a straight-up reprint of issue number 1. We sold a lot of copies of this, so a lot of people probably read it, but a lot of people probably haven't.
Yep.
And if you haven't, this is definitely one to pick up. It is a fantastic story.
Yep. Great. Perfect example of a first issue. Writer and artist are both firing on all cylinders.
You think this is for all ages?
Somewhat, yeah.
Because I know Archie is going to be one of those things that people... I think an 8-year-old
is going to find it a little bit too... It's going to be... The sort of particular humor of it is probably not going to quite connect with them. It is a little bit, you know, more that Ferris Bueller style.
Maybe, I don't know.
I feel like certainly there's nothing offensive in it or anything. No. And I think they might well like it. But I feel like it's almost more of like 10 or 11 and up.
And then there, on the back of that, they've got some of the first issue of Jughead by Chip Zdarsky and Eric Anderson. So, then the sadly not for kids, the Attack on Titan anthology.
Has an amazing array of talent on this.
Yeah, this is American creators doing the Attack on Titan story. So Michael Amon Oeming and Taki Soma, the Batgirl creative team of Brendan Fletcher, Cameron Stewart, and Babs Tarr, talented artist Kevin Wada. Evan Dorkin and Sarah Dyer.
And just based on the talent, you may have guessed, these are not stories that are all, like, in the same style. They range from anywhere from, like, weird, goofy, you know, humorous ones. Like, Evan Dorkin does a hilarious one-page thing. To, you know, serious stuff that, you know, is very much feels like it probably could be part of the canon of the main stories.
Yeah. These are fun little short stories, and it's a great... there's an ad in the back for the... hardcover collection coming in October of the Attack on Titan anthology. It's a great advertisement for that, too.
I never thought there would be so many interpretations of giant of skinned giants.
Yeah, and yeah.
There it is.
There it is. The book that I like, there's an Images All Ages book this year, is Oddly Normal, which is by Otis Frampton, who I found it is one of the two artists who does the How It Should Have Ended.
Oh, yeah.
And this is basically about a... It feels like... Courtney Crumrin or
Harry Potter,
one of those. It's a girl whose parents are mages. She's grown up to be a mage, and she doesn't like it. She's sort of isolated, and
I just thought there were nice little bits in there of character. I love how the rain, you know, hurts like her mother, but it hurts her in a little way. There's just little things throughout.
Yeah.
A really good story element.
She's a half-witch.
Yeah.
It's got nice animated style artwork, and this is the first chapter of the graphic novel that we do carry, so it's fun. I kind of liked it. Then there's Black Mask, which is definitely the up-and-comers of smaller publishers.
Well, they just announced that they have a Grant Morrison book coming in the next, like, few months.
Yeah.
He's working with somebody... So Black Mask is definitely on the radar with a lot of people.
And I think we all found this kind of a fascinatingly edgy read.
Yeah.
Definitely one of the more interesting grabbers.
Yeah, this is
for
adults. For older readers, yes. Yeah.
So
it's rated mature.
This is two stories. The first one is We Can Never Go Home.
Which reminds me a little bit of Nowhere Man. It's sort of a realistic superheroes kind of thing, but it's almost crime superheroes.
Yeah.
And then there's Young Terrorists, which I'm not quite sure how to... pitch.
I think it's sort of a weird father and daughter relationship where she is like created to be a weapon.
Yeah.
And her father is sort of like a weird amalgamation of an evil Professor Xavier in a lot of
like
ways.
Like a sadistic Xavier.
Yeah. And
they're both very character-centric stories.
They are.
They're like, they delve into these kind of like seamy kind of situations, but through... really interesting methods. Like, I was fascinated by the dialogue and the characters in a way I sometimes it really am not for books that have kind of those sorts of weird premises.
Yeah.
Sometimes those books, you know, seem to just be, like, plot-based.
Yeah.
And these are so character-driven and interestingly dialogued that I wasn't sure if it was necessarily for me, but I was very fascinated by it.
I thought both of the art styles were fantastic as well. So, yeah, this one I really recommend.
What's this actually called, Randy?
It's the Black Mass Sampler.
Okay, yeah, it's got We Can Never Go Home and Young Terrorists.
And then there's March, which is from Top Shelf, and
it samples three separate different graphic novels.
Books. March is a 3-book series. It's based on the life of Congressman John Lewis, who co-writes it. And his life in the civil rights movement in the 1960s. And then it's got beautiful art by Nate Powell.
Yep. This is one of those things where it's like, it sounds like it could be, it's essentially like a historical comic set in the 60s. And it seems like it could be dry, but it's really fascinating. Basically, this is a guy who was a major player in Martin Luther King's movement. But you better believe that aside from being fraught with violent peril, that there's all the interesting behind-the-scenes clashes over methodology and stuff like that, and just the being the first to do that, the people who put themselves on the line, it's really fascinating their stories in it. And you get to see that from behind the scenes. This guy who was like shoulder to shoulder with them.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
I really enjoyed it.
Then there was the book that Dave and Nick both loved.
I loved this book.
It's a bizarre little short little tale. It is
from Drawn in Quarterly Comics, who are kind of, you know, they're one of the sort of slightly more art house publishers.
But it's entitled Moon Cop.
Yes.
And it literally is about a cop on the moon.
Yep.
A lot of crime on the moon?
Not so much, but there is maybe like a lost dog or...
it's sort of told, I would say, almost in a newspaper strip style. Yeah. And very interestingly, it's drawn in a newspaper strip style with sort of a monochromatic design. It's really beautiful, but kind of elegantly simple. But it's like, how'd you call this? It's almost like a vertical comic, as if you were looking at an old 80s video game like Moon Patrol.
Sure.
Yeah.
But there was a story unfolding as the characters moved around back and forth. But somehow, it's like there are close-ups, but always from the side of the characters. And I don't know quite. It does add something. I really liked it as kind of a narrative contrivance. It's a stylized sort of thing. Almost all ages, I would say.
I would think so.
Or maybe actually all ages. But kind of dry. It was very witty.
Yeah, very wit. That's got a great wit. And ultimately, I think it's just a fun little story.
Yeah, I was very charmed by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, charming is a good way of putting it. And then the backups.
The backups are great. This guy has done like a bunch of single panel comic strips, at least one of which I pointed out to Tila because it's an image of a bookshelf that's color coded.
Yes.
And she says that is all over the internet. Like this clearly went viral. It says my library, and it color codes the books, and below that shows you the key, and it's like red, intending to read, half read. Pretend I've read, saving for when I have more time, will never read, purely for show, read but can't remember a single thing about it, wish I hadn't read. it's kind of, that's sort of typical of his sense of humor. It's both sort of observational, but also kind of dryly witty.
It's very smart humor. The Angry Mob one is great. It's just really funny.
Yeah, this was maybe my favorite actually out of all of these, or it's in my top three for sure.
Mm-hmm. Dave, you're also going to talk about Stuff of Legend.
Yeah, Stuff of Legend is a graphic novel series, comic series that is now collecting graphic novels. It's been around for a few years, but I never quite paid attention. It looked like it was kind of like a sort of edgier fairy tales or Toy Story kind of thing. So I actually sat down and read this one.
This is a reprint of the very first Stuff of Legend story.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I really liked it. In it, aside from having really beautiful art that's kind of like this realistic sepia-toned art, you see a kid goes missing. He's kind of drawn by these tentacles into his closet. And then his toys come to life in a somewhat Toy Story-ish manner and begin sort of planning a mission to save him. Now, what interested me about this was that although that sounds superficially like Toy Story, in execution, the toys kind of speak in this almost like more courtly way. It reminded me more of like the book The Indian in the Cupboard.
Yeah.
Where there was a little bit more, the characters were all a little bit deeper and more sort of nuanced than Toy Story. You know, there's some arguments over whether the dog who was with the kid was culpable or should have stopped it or could have stopped it.
Right.
And sort of, you know, who's going on the mission and who's not. They had some of the stuffed animals, which are kind of like toys, or they're old-fashioned toys, like an old, like, tin soldier and, you know, one of those little wooden ducks on wheels and things like that. So it does feel like an older, like it could be taking place in an older time.
Yeah.
But I found it, far from being kind of the, like, sort of trashy kiddie horror thing that I thought it was, to be, you know, fairly touching and well-realized. You know, it's sort of sweet and heroic at the same time. And again, really beautifully drawn. I'd have to read the whole graphic novel to get a sense for where it goes from there. But at least as an introduction, I really liked it. This one is also probably in my top three.
All right. And then we've got an assortment of sort of all ages, either favorites or ones we see every year, or the ones that I think are going to be big. Strawberry Shortcake from IDW. That's their big new get. And
I feel like it's kind of they're trying to do what My Little Pony did for kind of reinventing that property.
Yep.
For Strawberry Shortcake. The designs are beautiful.
The thing I like about this one, yeah, at the end, the back, it's got a little pages of each character and her pet.
Yep.
And of course that's always been the pitch of Strawberry Shortcake. I know because my daughter watched a ton of Strawberry Shortcake. But yeah, it looks like sort of goofy fun. It looks like they're aiming for that My Little Pony audience.
I'm guessing the writing is going to be a step up from say Strawberry Shortcake of the 80s.
Yeah, it's pretty. It looks pretty fun.
And also great art, store favorite Amy Memberson.
Yeah.
As usual, there is a SpongeBob offering. I was amused that the backup story in this features Aquaman, who they call Mermaid Man and Barnacle Boy. That's Evan Dorkin writing that one, by the way.
Yeah.
Grumpy Cat and Pokey have a book. Bob's Burgers has a book. Sonic Sampler, the Pink Panther, and then as always, there's the Bongo Free For All, which is several Simpsons books, including a one where Bartman and Homer, who's dressed up as the superhero. What is his superhero name? Let's see. Pie Man and the Cupcake Kid. And that's kind of it's a fun little Simpsons story.
Simpsons writers for the comics have always been pretty good.
Yeah, it's an assortment. It's got three stories in there. Then Boom Studios is their sampler, which includes
I like that sampler.
Yeah, it includes Adventure Time, of course. Mouse Guard, who have been sort of long-standing, and then there's got a Labyrinth story, Lumberjanes, the new Goldie Vance, which I really love, and a new painted graphic novel called Cloud that's just really beautiful.
Yeah, actually, that's one that I would specifically call out as being among my favorites, too. I forgot to mention that, but yeah, the Boom sampler is fantastic.
Titan Books is doing two samplers. One is a Doctor Who that's got basically sampler stories of four different doctors, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th.
It's a good intro if you're interested in maybe trying out the Doctor Who comics or just want some side adventures and stuff. It is actually quite good.
And then they've got an Assassin's Creed book, which has a story from their mainstream Assassin's Creed, and then Assassin's Creed Templars, which is about the bad guys in Assassin's Creed.
To me, they're the good guys.
Well, that's your point of view. You're going to get total assassinated. 2000 AD has a sampler. That contains a Judge Dredd story, a Bad Company story. Basically, a lot of the characters from
all
from
the crazy stuff they're doing in the UK.
But it includes writers like Peter Milligan, John Wagner, Carlos Esquerra, some of the guys who've been working on.
They're big guns.
They're big guns. There's the Comics Lab sampler, which is sort of a artsy kind of thing. That is mainly notable. It's really pretty art, and it's a bunch of different writers and artists doing their all ages. Well, that's not all ages, is it? It's a mix of stuff, but it's a sort of a mix of artsy and non artsy comics. And then there's Science Comics, which is another anthology. It's got a story about Maris Wicks doing a story about she's a cartoonist who also loves coral reefs. And does like underwater stuff, and how she blended those two loves. And then
that's kind of cool. I think I didn't get around to reading this one.
And then the backup is a science fiction story about volcanoes that takes place in sort of a post-apocalyptic world. These are both sort of mixes of sort of science with fiction. Really fun.
Yeah, that looked neat.
And then there's Space Goat Productions, which is a smaller publisher that has a bunch of all ages comics sampler. So it's Dark Lily, Monster Elementary, Rocket Queen and the Wrench, and Mage Inc. That's a sampling of it. That is not even the whole thing. That's just the ones that we wanted to specifically highlight
real for us.
Yeah. But come out on Free Comic Book Day this Saturday and check them out and pick up some books.
And then if you can, wear a superhero or a comic-related t-shirt because that's cool.
Indeed, or a full-on costume.
Oh, my gosh, yes. If you can, you'll get the biggest high five of all time.
Yes. All right. That wraps up our Free Comic Book Day spotlight. We'll be back in just a few seconds to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, May 4th, and it's another big week, lots of stuff, so we're going to dive right in. We're going to dive in first with a pick off the top that we all liked, not quite enough to make our top two picks.
But because we all liked it, it's a bonus.
It's a bonus pick. So this is a new Oni book called Space Battle Lunchtime. It's by cartoonist Natalie Reese.
I feel that people who are in Steven Universe.
Oh yeah.
Adventure Time even.
I wouldn't say it's like Scott Pilgrim. I'm not big on all the Cartoon Network stuff, but this was, I also have a huge fondness for Iron Chef and Chopped and that kind of stuff.
If you liked the television series Chopped or Iron Chef, yep, this is also.
So the basic premise is there's this pastry chef at a coffee shop. One day an alien comes in. They need a last minute substitution for their galactic space chef show. And so they go ahead and recruit an Earthling.
I like how she, by the way, this is kind of the tone of it.
Yeah.
She just immediately agrees. She's like, that sounds awesome. Let's do it.
Do you have what it takes to be the greatest chef in the galaxy? You mean like a competition? I guess you could say that. Absolutely. And then they just beam her up. I also like they acknowledge things of like she's walking through and they're like, look, I know you at first don't get out much, but you'll need to save your whole wide-eyed wow space thing for the show.
Yeah, the aliens are very businesslike about how this.
Good design work for the aliens. They're unique and fun.
It looks like they're almost Muppety.
Yeah,
and it's sort of a Muppety look.
And just the cartooning throughout gives it this lightness and this air of fun.
It's clean. It's colorful. It's got beautiful colors and designs.
I noticed that the colors are have an almost watercolor look to them,
yeah,
but with that pop brightness of I would say the best of Cartoon Network.
Yeah. They introduce her, they introduce the show, and then they get to the start of it, and then they leave off in the cliffhanger.
Yeah.
So,
which is a fun cliffhanger.
Yeah. I really liked this. I think this is a lot of fun, and I think people will dig it.
Say the name again, Randy.
Space Battle Lunchtime.
Space Battle Lunchtime.
To go a completely different way from my pick, I have Daredevil the Punisher number one. Which is a new miniseries written by Charles Soule, the current writer on Daredevil. And layouts are by Riley Brown, and pencils and inks are by Szymon Kudenski. It's sort of a gritty, painty look to it. Different from what he's been doing in his Daredevil run, where it's all sort of black and white, chiaroscuro, noir kind of thing. This is more...
Less detailed
Libra Mayo. Yeah, I was going to say Libra Mayo is definitely a vibe I would get. But this puts Daredevil, who's a prosecutor, is trying to get
I thought you were going to say Daredevil's a prostitute.
Basically, he's transferring a prisoner.
Prisoner, yeah, who he's going to prosecute. They're moving him to Texas so they can get a fair trial because they can't get a trial in New York.
As the guy notes, Texas, maybe not the state you'd necessarily want to be transferred to.
Right. And then Punisher makes an attempt on his life, and it's Punisher versus Daredevil versus Blindspot versus this bad guy.
In a big sort of mobile chase.
Yes, great chase sequence, fun action.
Almost weirdly, I don't want to say that it's like it tonally, but Road Warrior in the sense that it was a sort of moving battle for a lot of it as they're trying to literally get from point A to point B, and the Punisher... If at first he does not succeed, he will try again.
That's a good point, actually. I totally can see that. I also like that this notes, as Nick noted, that Daredevil has erased that identity from everybody, including the Punisher. The Punisher does not know who he is.
Exactly. That's sort of a first.
The Punisher in here is almost like a Terminator.
Right.
He's just can't be stopped. No matter what they do, they know he's still coming.
Yeah, he's a beast.
And I really dug this. I thought it was a lot of fun. Dave, your pick?
My pick is the first issue of the new Dungeons & Dragons miniseries.
It's miniseries, yeah.
It's a five issue mini.
Called Shadows of the Vampire. So if you read the previous one, this is Jim Zub is writing, who wrote the previous one, has a really good feel for D&D. He brings a lot of humor to it, but without sacrificing a serious plot. He generally has a serious plot going on. comedic interplay between the characters often. In particular, when you have Minsk and Boo,
yep.
The star NPCs of the old Baldur's Gate video games, you know, this basically this hulking ranger guy who I can only say is a little bit like the Tick.
Yeah.
And his tiny hamster. Miniature giant space hamster, yep. And they do have, like, a team with them now. There's, like, a mage and a rogue and a ranger? Is that what they
have? I think so, yeah.
And the addition of possibly a cleric in this.
Yep.
There's a sort of a neat plot that kicks off where, and I always like when he weaves in a little bit of the actual Forgotten Realms history stuff. A temple of Kelimvor, their god of the dead. Mm-hmm. Who's kind of a chill god of the dead. They try and ease people into the afterlife, and they hate the undead.
Yeah, he's sort of neutral instead of evil.
Right. But the problem is that they are, in fact, undead has been precisely what's been assaulting them, attacking their temples. And so they hire on our heroes to basically stay a few nights and see if they can root them out. And that kicks off the adventure. There's undead, there's werewolves in this. There's some awesome stuff with the space hamster.
Yeah.
I will also say that I don't know a ton about Forgotten Realms.
Right.
And I think the way that Jim Zub sort of introduces a lot of the concepts and ideas in here are a lot of fun, especially with this order, which I didn't know anything about, and sort of that they are kind of, you know, it's a god of the dead, but it's neutral.
This is not like the traditional, like, you know, like a Grim Reaper who's like a villainous.
Yeah, but the stigma that the town has against them in some ways is interesting. There's just some fun concepts that he brings to light that I...
And also, even the antagonists in this have some more to them than you think at first. I would say sort of he introduces the details of the Forgotten Realms. Like, I don't know the Forgotten Realms that well. I know enough that I recognized Kelimvor when he was mentioned, but I don't know much beyond that.
Yeah.
It's introduced in a way that's newbie friendly.
Yeah, it's
I would
very
say.
Newbie friendly.
But if you know the realms, you're gonna kind of enjoy seeing some of the sights in here. Anyway, I knew I was probably gonna like this before I even picked it up because it was same characters. But it is leading into a horror direction in this. There's, you know, like everything else going on in D&D tabletop games right now. Ravenloft looms over all Count Strahd.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, he's clearly going to... Minsk and Boo will have to test themselves against this.
Yep.
Anyway, a very good first issue. There's a backup story that I did not get around to reading in it that... do you know what that was, Randy?
No, I don't remember.
Tyranny of Dragons, which was a separate D&D like adventure module.
Right.
This one looked like it was mostly told through captions, so almost like it was like an illustrated, like, maybe the history that sets up that adventure.
Yeah.
I haven't read it yet. Anyway... it's already good for the main story. You might as well read some backup. It could, you know, if it's any good at all, it's just cool bonus gravy. Anyway, very happy with it.
Cool bonus gravy.
Bonus gravy.
and I'm going to talk about a one-shot from Dark Horse, The Beasts of Burden, What the Cat Dragged In.
Yeah.
What the Cat Dragged In. Now, Beasts of Burden is basically a series of one-shots or small mini-series by Evan Dorkin and artist Jill Thompson, and focuses on a small town of Burden Hill, and the animals, mostly cats and dogs, that sort of live in it, but they're also paranormal investigators.
Right.
So they're kind of given anthropomorphic, you know, they can talk to each other, and sometimes they drag in other animals, this one has a raccoon.
It's just a touch like Watership Down, because there's certainly some gritty realism to it.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, they bring sort of a Hellboyish kind of darkness to the table.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Hellboy, because it's also, like, unlike Watership Down, which is, like, the animals are sort of... a little bit more limited in their concepts.
Yeah.
Like, they don't kind of understand human stuff at all. They're meant to still be rabbit's heart. These animals do have a little bit more... they're a little more street savvy, almost, in a way. And they kind of have personalities that I would say would remind me a little bit of Hellboy-type concepts.
Yeah. And it's dark and kind of... I mean, it can be funny at times, but there's also the coolness that this is a one-shot. You can just come in on it. But if you've been reading for a while... there's a lot of sort of backstory to the characters that gets added on.
Yep.
As this one focuses on sort of an adversary of the main sort of animal group that has sort of come around to being more of a good guy.
Yep.
And sort of the repercussions that She, a black cat who was a sort of witch's familiar, has to deal with, sort of make amends. And it's a sort of touching tale and kind of hits home for the characters.
Now, I didn't read all of this, but I read about half of it before we did the podcast, and I really liked it. I'm not up at all on Beasts of Burden, so I should say that I do feel this one shot is a good testing thing. And one of the kind of cool things, just as an example of what goes on in the book, is they're trying to break into this house early on, which is where the witch used to live. Right?
Yes.
And the cats are like, unfortunately, we can't like turn doorknobs.
Yeah.
So they have to. They have to recruit help. Which ends up being this kind of like, sort of like smartass kind of streetwise raccoon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a really great series of sequences. I love how Jill Thompson, is Jill Thompson?
It is.
How she illustrates it, because they're basically realistic.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know, in this era of like internet animal love, I feel like I see all this stuff with them. I feel like anybody who kind of enjoys all that internet animal imagery is going to get a kick out of this.
Yeah, she gives
a great sense of character to the characters.
Given how realistic they are overall, they have a lot of personality.
Yeah, and I was just very happy with it overall. I will say, if you pick this up and you love it, Dark Horse has a great hardcover collection that's, I think, $20. And it's fantastic. Yep. I would highly recommend getting
it. It's the supernatural of animal comics.
Yep.
And my secondary pick, while Randy picked the Punisher Daredevil one-shot, there is also another Punisher book that starts up tomorrow.
Yep.
And that is Punisher number 1 by Becky Cloonan and art by Steve Dillon. And for, I think, right off the bat, if you have any love for Garth Ennis's Punisher, I'd say give this one a look, because there's a lot of similarities with how Becky Cloonan sort of treats.
Specifically his Marvel Max series.
Yeah.
Although this one is, presumably, I believe, within the Marvel Universe and does censor its swearing.
A little bit.
But it's pretty easy to figure out what they're saying.
But I mean, the sort of violence that you expect from Punisher is there. Becky Cloonan also offers in sort of another kind of character in here that has connections to Frank.
I like that a lot.
And I thought that was a really smart way of introducing another layer to Frank and sort of his reaction to it.
It's something I hadn't seen before in Punisher stories.
Yeah, well, also, one of the things I like here, one of the things that in any Punisher story that's important is the cops that are after him, you've got to give them some character.
Yeah.
And her two cops that she introduced are really interesting, too.
They are. They don't feel just, like, tacked on. They're part of the story, and I'm happy for that, because sometimes they don't really belong there.
Yeah.
And I actually thought Steve Dillon did an amazing job with it, much more so than I was anticipating, because,
you know, he's been that way lately. I felt he was going to be a kind of weird fit on Scarlet Witch, and he ended up doing quite a great job on that. And
his Frank felt imposing, and sort of the sort of Terminator that he did in a different way than the Punisher Daredevil.
Well, and Dillon has always done well with the ultraviolence. He does well with the gunshots and the punches.
You're going to enjoy the cinder block sequence.
And of course, there's a pretty good stinger and kind of a macabre one.
That's another surprise. Another thing that Steve Dillon draws well, you're kind of surprised that's a tool in his box, but there you go.
You
Preacher fans are going to find, surprisingly, something to relate to in this Punisher.
But overall, I'm very impressed with what Becky Cloonan has brought to this first issue, and I'm very excited to see what she continues to bring.
What did she write before Becky Cloonan, or what is she write project?
She wrote a number of things.
She's mostly known for her art. Her writing, she did her standalone stuff that she did for herself.
She wrote Southern Cross.
Okay. And
I guess for whatever reason, I was not expecting she would be an easy fit for a character kind of as gritty as the Punisher, and it does turn out that her influence is coming from something like Garth Ennis, I would say, is very much fits the Punisher.
I think Becky's always got a bit of that metal head in her. It fits. Oh, yeah. It fits to me. Okay. It totally fits. Dave, what's your backup pick?
My backup pick, I don't have a lot to say about because I've talked endlessly about it.
Yep.
Is Claus number 5? That is Claus, as in Santa Claus Year 1, Grant Morrison's thing.
Yep.
Next, this is the penultimate issue. Oh, no, it's not. There's two more.
It's like 8 issues, right, isn't it?
I forgot they expanded. It's like 7. 7, 7 is what they're saying on the cover. And they might expand it to 12.
We'll see. Who knows?
This issue is sort of notable for a lot of kind of cool rooftop sequences with our Santa Year 1. What do they call him?
I don't remember.
The ghost of Christmas or something.
Yeah, but like, no, like, what's his, like, did they say his name?
I don't remember.
Just blank him anyway. But in particular, he is being hunted in this one, and it's you know, there's some very human scenes intercut with the lord of the town and his wife. Yep. And their kid.
I think the scenes that got to me the most are the kid's letters to Santa.
Yep.
Yeah.
Those are great.
You know what's weird? You know what this reminded me of when anything else was Batman Year One? When that's he's like on the run from the cops.
Yeah. When the SWAT team traps him in the building.
Yeah.
This is the Santa version of that.
Yeah.
And they do. He is cool, but you know, he's like, he's hurt. He's there is a new bit of mythology, I think, introduced at the end.
Yep.
That sort of reveals this is why he. I can even say without, because it won't tell you what it links to, but the sleigh, the drawn sleigh is kind of,
I have to say,
referenced in
Dan
this.
Dan Mora is still drawing the hell out of this book.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Yep. So it's a double fantasy pick for me this week. I've got D&D and Claws. If it has swords in it, I read it.
Oh, okay.
Unless Ready? It stinks.
My pick is Moon Knight number 2. I picked number 1 a few weeks back. When I read number 1, I really liked it. I didn't know quite what's going on. He's in a mental hospital. There's implications that it may not really be happening, that he might just be crazy. But I got the sense there was more going on. And in the second issue, they definitely show a bit more of what's going on. The other thing I thought was interesting, in that first issue, I thought, okay, so they're basically going back to the old Moon Knight. They're sort of ignoring what Warren Ellis had done.
No,
Warren Ellis' stuff shows up in here. Like, they are obviously, they're integrating the Warren Ellis stuff as well. Which I thought was really interesting.
I think it's actually an interesting thing for Lemire to do, is to sort of pay homage to every version of Moon Knight.
Yeah, I think it's good.
Do you think the Ellis version, to me at least, it'd be weird to me if they did not kind of make that the main version, ultimately?
Because I think it worked.
But he may be, but I haven't read this issue yet, he may be looking for some kind of integration thing.
Yeah.
Well, he definitely, I mean, I think he's trying to integrate the old take and the new take, which is good, because I like the old take better.
And that art's beautiful.
The art is gorgeous, and they're doing some nice. They're doing sort of a full color, and then there's one that's sort of a not sepia, but sort of not really black and white. It's just a sort of dream world,
more like dreamy sketch line version, but it's like detailed sketch.
It's again, it's like that chiaroscuro, little Bill Sienkiewicz maybe. Yeah.
It looks not like art like you might find on Sandman.
Yeah,
you know, from Neil Gaiman's Sandman.
But it sort of explains the premise a little bit more, brings in a ton of the supporting cast, which I really liked, and then has some monsters. So you know, I'm really digging this book. I can't wait to see what's happening next with it. I don't know where they're going, but I'm really digging it, and it's got really beautiful artwork. Then we've got on my other stack of stuff, 4001 AD from Valiant, which is the start of their sort of summer crossover of sorts. But it's, as always with Valiant, their summer crossover is going to be somewhat contained. This is going to be a 4-issue miniseries with a couple of one shots looking in on what happens to the Bloodshot in 4001 AD and Rye and Exo Manowar, sort of their main characters and what's going on in that futuristic timeline. This is 4001 AD is where Japan has sort of moved into the skies. It's a island nation. It's gone very isolationist, and they have a computer named Father that sort of runs everything in a sort of a totalitarian way. The guardian of that place is Rai. And it's a hereditary thing, like it's a chosen position. And the current Rai has figured out that Father is somewhat corrupt, and now he's trying to overthrow him.
Who's the artist on that?
It is Clayton Crane doing sort of a painted style.
I have to say, it looks pretty nice on that.
It's really beautiful. It's nice painted art.
His futurism stuff looks pretty sweet.
It does involve, I believe, a giant space dragon. So you're not going to see that in any other comic. It's a really good, if you have any interest in sort of cool sci-fi superheroes, whether you've read Valiant or not before, it's a good opener. Thunderbolts number 1 by Jim Zub of D&D fame. He's doing the new Thunderbolts, which sees the Winter Soldier leading a team of the classic Thunderbolts. Their agenda is to take on S.H.I.E.L.D. And there's a twist in here from the Standoff crossover as to why they're doing this and what's going on that I liked. The latest issue of Amazing Spider-Man number 12 starts a new story called Stark Contrast, which pits Peter Parker and Tony Stark in the same place the first time since Mary Jane started working for him. That's a lot of fun. It all starts at a charitable fundraiser for Peter Parker's Uncle Ben Foundation, and it uses a great villain to match up against two corporate heroes like this. And also in the background, they're introducing a villain who showed up in the Secret Wars Amazing Spider-Man Renew Your Vows, who we know is a very dangerous villain, and they're doing a great job of establishing him here.
First time in the main universe?
Yes, yes. Black Widow number 3 is another great Black Widow. They're doing Mark Waid and Chris Samney doing exactly what I want out of Black Widow. This is Black Widow goes to Russia, remembers some of her training in the Red Room, and is on a mission for her new handler. Captain America number 9, Sam Wilson. I love this book. It continues to be everything I wanted of Captain America. There are some 90s callbacks and a couple characters they use in here. Some great action. And they're dealing with what it means for Sam now that Steve Rogers is Captain America again. Poe Dameron number 2 is great fun. Introduces a really interesting First Order bad guy to sort of match wits with Poe. Has some cool Black Squadron action and some funny bits and just a great issue. Uncanny X-Men number 7. Ties a little more into Apocalypse Wars and what's going on with Archangel and Angel. And, again, has some interesting bad guys that I did not expect to see in it. New Avengers number 11 gets back to the artist I'm not as crazy about, but he does okay in here. And sort of after all that happened in Standoff, they're breaking up, and the team is going to have to sort of form a new team and a new reason for being. And it's basically Hulkling, Wiccan, Squirrel Girl, and a couple others getting together and forming a new team. And I like that a lot. Spider-Gwen number 8 is the next part of the Spider-Women crossover, the second half of that, where they've moved over into our world. Then there's Descender Volume 2, a book we all really, literally love.
Finally gets a second volume.
Get its second collection, which people have been waiting for.
If you need to know desperately what happened to Driller, you're going to find out.
And We Stand on Guard gets a beautiful oversized hardcover collection that is Brian Vaughn and Steve Scroach's story of what happens when United States Mecca invade Canada and Canada fights back.
This is for sure going to happen if Trump wins the presidency.
Probably so.
It absolutely will be appreciated.
It's book. Yep. Mm-hmm. Dave, what else is on your stack?
Did we mention Street Fighter G.I. Joe? Street Fighter G.I. Joe number 3. I have not gotten around to reading this yet, but Alan Moore headlines with Kevin O'Neill from League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, a new anthology comic called Cinema Purgatorio. It's actually a crazy huge list of talent on there. There's Garth Ennis, Max Brooks, Kieran Gillen, Christos Gage. I mean, I haven't gotten around to reading it because this felt like something I needed to sit. I want to sit down and read it and not do kind of, you know, any sort of hasty read for our podcast. But for sure going to check it out. It looks like these guys are going out of their way, from what I gather, to rebuild the concept of an anthology into something that's really good and approachable.
Sure.
And then lastly, I want to mention the very nice Biggie-sized trade paperback of Brian Wood's book Rebels. Again, as we always have to mention, not Rebels, the Star Wars animated thing, but Rebels, the Revolutionary War era one that he does. So this is historical fiction. Flipping through it, I was I had enjoyed it, but just lost track of the issue individual issues. As I flip through it now, I'm shocked at how good the art is.
Oh, the art's great!
Really amazing.
Yeah.
And so, if you want that sort of, you know, Wood, if you've read any of his Northlanders or other books he's done that have kind of been historically based, you know, he kind of brings an edgy but kind of. He likes to look into all sides of the story. There are probably, I imagine, in this going to be honorable and heroic characters represented on the UK side of things. He also shows the interactions with Native Americans, contributions of women like in the Revolution, along with you know, the subtleties and politics of the more traditional revolutionary heroes. So I'm super looking forward to reading this. It's a big trade. It's like the first 10 issues, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they waited until they actually had a huge bite to serve up, and I'm really looking forward to it. You had all like the historical stuff. Check this one out.
I've got a few things that have not been mentioned yet.
Yep.
The second issue of Mark Miller and Stuart Evanen's sci-fi action adventure extravaganza hits, and I liked it just as much.
The
as
title
I
of that being Empress.
Oh, Empress. Yeah, you can guess. One of the many comic properties that have been optioned for another movie. No, but it's a lot of fun. I think it was a little better than the first issue.
Yeah, I really liked this issue.
There's some great action pieces here, and Stuart Evanen gets to have a lot of fun.
Miller, we were talking about this. One of his talents is like he builds books around what sort of could be a novelty premise, and seems to be able to delve deeper into, you know,
because I feel like even though it's
Right. I don't really mean it as an insult to him. I mean it's a talent he has, actually, yeah. is he can take a novelty premise and turn it into something with depth. But Empress seems like an interesting thing, a way to tell sort of a, I don't know if it's going to ultimately, but sort of like a feminist story, or at least a story about a woman who's kind of like trying to break out of, in this case, not so much an abusive relationship as husband is an evil dictator.
Yeah.
But sort of practically speaking, you know, if you look at it as a expanded, you know, version of a real world thing, it is about that.
Yeah.
And I like that it sort of, you know, it has an approachability that way, despite the fact that it takes place in dinosaur times and has spaceships.
True. The third issue of the slightly puzzling but beautiful to look at book, The Discipline.
That book's naughty.
It is naughty, but... And I really don't know what I'm reading half the time, but the story kind of stays with you and is weird and enticing.
That
and
does sound like Peter Milligan.
It's about sex and secret societies.
Yes, yeah. Sex and secret societies. Another issue of Invincible Iron Man. This is fairly notable because it introduces a new character in an iron suit that a character has built. It's interesting. The second issue of the Independence Day, tying into the new movie.
Is it a prequel?
Yeah, it's the prequel to the movie that's about to hit. The Unbelievable Gwenpool number 0. And then the third issue of the X-Men 92 series that sees the X-Men go up against Dracula. Because that always works out well for them. But it was a fun issue.
I will say, although this is, you know, specifically homaging, you know, the animated series that I did not tune into in the 90s. I was out of that scene. But X-Men versus Dracula in general, the two 80s outings that Bill Sienkiewicz drew, one was an annual and one was a regular issue, are super awesome issues.
Yep.
I loved that slightly amped up Dracula who could, like, take on the whole X-Men.
Yeah.
It was creepy as hell, too.
Utilizes a little bit of that. Because I think he probably loves those stories.
Probably. Sort of they never got around to this on the animated series, but here's what it would have looked like if they did.
Yeah, a little bit.
All right, well, that about wraps it up for us this week. Come and see us at Free Comic Book Day this Saturday. It's going to be a whole lot of fun.
Yes.
And until that time,
Yo, Joe!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.